for the Honorable the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. Our minds draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 09-3410, United States of America, Attorney Marshall. Ms. Dyer, will you come up?
Morning, there.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Beverly Dyer on behalf of Melvin Lawrence. The district court erred in its factual finding that if Mr. Lawrence had been sentenced for cocaine powder instead of crack cocaine, his career offender sentencing guidelines range would not change and would remain 262 to 327 months. Instead, in that event, his guideline range as a career offender would have been 210 to 240 months. The district review of this error by this court does not require this court to consider whether the district court lacked prescience with respect to pending or proposed legislation. Instead, the district court erred in three ways. First, the district court appeared to presume that the legislation would pass, and that presumption was very reasonable given that the Attorney General and the President and a majority of Congress supported that legislation. In that event, the district court could have reasonably reduced the sentence based on the pending legislation in order to get out in front of it, in order to make Mr. Lawrence more consistent with upcoming crack offenders.
Are we likely to enter a precedent that says district judges should consider pending legislation in their sentencing decisions?
Not at all. All this court need do is consider whether this particular district court judge, given her comments, would have been likely to reduce the sentence had she not made a mistake in concluding that the career offender guidelines would not change if the offense were treated as a powder one. The court, in addition to possible, now if the court were to consider the error that I just discussed, that the court might have reduced the sentence without continuing the sentence or sentencing proceedings, but reduced the sentence just because of the proposed legislation, that review would require a remedy in which the district court would consider the sentence as of the time of sentencing. The district court also erred by not continuing sentencing, given its expectation that legislation would pass. And the error, does not require the district court to predict the outcome of the legislation, but required the court to recognize that a powder offense would not receive the same career offender guideline sentence as a crack cocaine offense. And third, even under counsel's one-to-one parity argument, a pure Kimbrough, a plain vanilla crack reduction or crack powder disparity reduction argument, the district court erred in believing that there would be no effect on the career offender guidelines. So under all three of these errors, the correct or the appropriate sentence range would have been 210 to 240 months. And I emphasize the 240 because it's lower than the 250 months that the district court in fact
imposed. Is that calculation taking into account the change in law which had not yet occurred, or?
That calculation is only taking into account what the district court might have been likely to do given what it knew and believed at that time. It appeared to believe
that's not quite an answer to my question. You're asking the district court to have taken into account a statute that had not yet passed, is it?
No. I'm asking the district court to take into account the possibility that parity with powder would result in a reduction in the career offender guidelines.
Which is based on the possible change in the law, right?
In that event, the district court might have wanted to reduce the sentence given the proposed legislation in Congress, which the district court even commented on the fact that the judge had spoken with Judge Walton, who was spearheading efforts in Congress to change the legislation, and gave every indication that of suggesting that if the court had understood, had not made the error in miscalculating what the effect on the career offender guidelines would be, both under a one-to-one parity argument, under proposed legislation, and under the request to continue sentencing, under all three of those possibilities, the court could have reduced the sentence to at least 240 months, and more likely even 210 months. In these circumstances, a remedy for failing to continue sentence would be sentencing at this time, would be sentencing or resentencing, and and that resentencing would be likely to consider, in fact, the Fair Sentencing Act. In that event, this court should also correct the factual error in drug quantity that the court made findings regarding. And I don't believe that Mr. Lawrence would receive any windfall if the Fair Sentencing Act were applied to him.
Now, we should be looking at this under plain error?
No, I believe this was preserved. It was preserved by
counsel. On the pending legislation? How was that preserved?
The counsel requested a continuance for the pending legislation, also requested a one-to-one parity argument in part based on the pending legislation, and requested a plain one-to-one parity.
But wasn't the discussion all about the powder versus base? It wasn't about career offenders at all, was it?
Well, the counsel did not point out in the written filings before sentencing that there would be an effect on the career offender guidelines, but right. was not required to. By making a one-to-one parity request, counsel was seeking treatment of Mr. Lawrence as though he was a powder offender. And what would automatically follow from that treatment would be a reduction in the career offender guidelines. Counsel made that simultaneously with an overrepresentation argument that the court rejected. But in fact, the court did go down 12 months based on a cocaine powder offense, suggesting that the court was willing to get out in front of the legislation to some extent, or to reduce the sentence based on Kimbrough to some extent. And in that event, had the court not made the error with respect to the career offender guidelines, it might have gone down further, at least to 240 months, and even more likely to 210 months. So in my view, the district court made a factual error, not only in drug quantity, but also in its understanding of the effect on a parity argument.
And that's a factual error?
It's
not being prescient about what Congress was going to do?
It doesn't require prescience.
Well, you're talking about there was a proposal in Congress, right?
There was a proposal in Congress, and that might have encouraged the district court to even further consider a Kimbrough-based argument. But I think that the court did not have to predict the outcome of that legislation in order to recognize that it could conceivably affect the crack cocaine guidelines.
So could conceivably affect, right?
Well, the court.
I mean, you've just sort of stated the problem yourself. Could conceivably affect.
Well, would affect under the parity argument that counsel was making and the court appeared to consider, but for its mistake about the career offender guidelines. So it's just that one mistake.
What is the mistake about career offender guidelines exactly?
That parity would not affect the career offender guidelines. Even a one-to-one parity argument would have reduced the level to 32 and the range to 210 to 240 months.
You're asking the court to know what the law is going to be instead of what the law is at that moment. I have a hard time finding that to be a mistake, Kath.
That's not what the mistake was, thinking that even if it passed, it would have no effect on the career offender guidelines, and that was incorrect. Because anything
that's
that passed...
That's not correct or incorrect. That's a failure to anticipate properly. I don't see how it's a mistake to be unable to predict what Congress is going to do. If it is, we're all in trouble.
The court suggested that it might have gone down, and it might have gone down more than 12 months if it had understood that there would be, in fact, an effect on the career offender guidelines, even under a Kimbrough argument.
Isn't your strongest point that the district court said she consulted with a colleague who was familiar with the legislation and was told that even if the legislation passed, it would have no effect on the career offender provisions. So then the district court says, I have a policy disagreement with the disparity, and so I am going to provide a sentence, although I'm not going to go as far as defense counsel is requesting. So isn't it that scenario that is your strongest argument about error, that if the district court had understood that the legislation would have, if passed, affected the career offender sentencing, then she might have gone further than she did? I mean, all this is speculation, but I mean, I thought it's that colloquy on the record by the district court that sort of sets up your case.
That's exactly the error. And I think even before that colloquy in which she mentions Judge Walton, there is a paragraph in which she suggests that even under a plain disparity argument, there would be no effect on career offender guidelines. I think that those two errors are a mistake of understanding of what effect parity would have on the career offender guidelines.
You know, in another case, a different district court judge, aware of the legislation, actually entered a sentence under the laws that existed at the time he sentenced, and stated alternatively, if this legislation passes, as I expect it to, I would sentence the defendant as follows. So by the time the case came here, we had it clear on the record. Was there any suggestion along those lines here?
Well, I think the fact that the court went down by 12 months suggests that it was willing to go down to some extent to get in front of the legislation or to...
Was that related to the legislation or just her fundamental disagreement with the existing law?
That was unclear, but under either of those, she misunderstood the effect on the career offender guidelines, that the maximum sentence under statute would be 20 years and that the lowest guideline range would be 210 months. It appears that had she understood that the parity argument under either Kimbrough or based on the pending legislation, and particularly the proposed legislation at that time, would lower the guideline range to the level to 32 and the range to 210 to 240 months, she might have done something more than the 12 months that she did. And I think that indicates, a finding by this court that in this case the district court judge might have gone lower would not suggest that in every case a district court would require to or should or is supposed to take account of pending legislation. And I don't think that this district court by any means was required to do that. It just indicates, the record suggests that she would have.
Between us or among us, we've used up all of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear from the appellee.
Good morning. May it please the court, Michelle Parikh-Brown for the government. The district court did not plainly err here in her consideration of H.R. 3245. As the bench has noted today, that pending legislation at the time of appellant sentencing never became law. And in any event, the district court did consider the principles that were underlying H.R. 3245 when she decided to sentence appellant below his guidelines range.
So why is our standard of review plain error?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, while appellant did ask for the court to consider H.R. 3245, when the court set forth her reasons when the court discussed at sentencing her impression of 3245, there was no objection or correction of what the court understood the impact of 3245 to be. Technically, the government doesn't believe that there was any error because what the district court said, in fact, was correct. As an initial matter, as a matter of fact, because the legislation wasn't passed, it had no effect on the career offender guidelines.
Would you agree that the district court did err in failing to understand that if the legislation passed, it would affect the guideline range under the career offender sentencing?
What I believe the district court said was that H.R. 3245 did not touch the career offender guidelines.
She said she had consulted with a colleague who was intimately familiar with this legislation, and it would not affect career offender sentencing. Isn't that what the record shows?
Yes, Your Honor. What she said was
that... would you not agree that that was error?
I believe what happened, Your Honor, is that she said...
That's a yes or no, and then you can explain. Because I've asked you twice.
I don't believe that what she said on the record was an error. I think that she did not appreciate what impact the pending legislation could have on the application of the career offender guidelines.
So she did err because she failed to appreciate the impact that the legislation would have. I mean, you're saying it, counsel, just in different words. I mean, that's an error, whether it's an error
that... Would it be your position that that's not a legal error since it had nothing to do with the law then or now?
That would be my position.
Yes, precisely. That's what I was trying to get at, that there was an error, but it may not afford appellant any relief.
I understand what Your Honor is saying. I think technically what she said wasn't incorrect. I think she didn't take the further step to appreciate what effect that the pending legislation would have had on the calculation. And when she set forth her understanding of what impact H.R. 3245 would have, appellant didn't say anything to correct that understanding or to push her to draw out the conclusions that would have resulted from the passage of this bill. Now, appellant has just said that the district court was acting under the presumption that the bill was going to be passed, and we disagree with that. She didn't continue the sentencing because, as she articulated in her order, there was no indication when or whether the bill would be considered by all of Congress or whether it would pass. And of course, there had been other legislation aimed at addressing the disparity between crack and powder defendants. And the Sentencing Commission had been advocating for such changes since dating back to the 90s. Ultimately, in this case, appellant can't show that his substantial rights were affected because the court explicitly noted the possibility that at some future time the career offender guidelines could be revised based on the disparity. And ultimately, the most important point is that she did appreciate the principle that was underlying H.R. 3245 when she sentenced appellant below the guidelines range. That was her explicit reason, was she disagreed with the disparity and therefore was going to grant a sentence below the guidelines range. And that is exactly what H.R. 3245 was aimed at addressing. The government's position that the drug quantity was also not a plain error and in any event wouldn't have affected, appellant cannot show that it would affect his substantial rights because the difference in the drug quantity would not have made a difference under the law as it stood, nor would it have made a difference under the law if H.R. 3245 had passed. If there are no further questions on that point, I can move on to some of the other points that were raised by appellant's brief. The district court did not plainly err in considering appellant's lack of remorse when he chose to allocute at sentencing. In this case, appellant did not invoke his Fifth Amendment rights, and there is some support saying that, for example, the Roberts case, the Supreme Court says that the Fifth Amendment rights are not they are not self-executing.
You don't cite the Jones case in your brief. Appellant does cite the Jones case, and it seemed to me that it was rather impelling toward your position. In Jones, the en banc court held the issue presented in this case is quite straightforward. Whether a sentencing judge who grants a defendant credit for acceptance of responsibility, thereby putting the defendant in a lower range under the sentencing guidelines, may take account of the defendant's decision to go to trial when sentencing within that new lower range, we hold that the judge may do so. Now, I grant you that is factually distinguishable from this case before us, but it nonetheless does hold that a judge may consider to the defendant's detriment on the question of remorse the fact that the defendant chose to go to trial.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Jones is fully in support of what the district court did here.
Now, granted, I believe Jones was wrongly decided, but it was so decided. I mean, I dissented. It's obvious that I didn't like the result, but that is the law of the circuit.
That's correct, Your Honor. There is certainly support in this circuit for using the lack of remorse expressed at the allocution exactly the way that the district court did in this case. And especially in this case where the district court sentenced appellant below the guidelines range, as Jones discusses, regardless where you set a baseline when you're considering the difference between lenience and penalizing someone, the baseline cannot be below the guidelines. Now, appellant in its reply brief discusses the Caro case, which is a Fourth Circuit case, and asserts that that case suggests that Mitchell read together with the Estelle case stands for the proposition that a court cannot use a defendant's silence to show lack of remorse. However, that case was a death penalty case, and in that case, the silence was being used as a non-statutory aggravating factor. And there's a footnote in Caro that explicitly says that the Fourth Circuit has found that withholding a sentencing discount, unlike a sentencing enhancement, would not penalize the defendant's sentence. So in the way that the district court used the silence here would, even under Caro's reasoning, be perfectly appropriate. Moreover, the appellant can't show that his substantial rights were affected because the judge made full findings considering all the 3553A factors, and this was just one of a number of considerations that went into the judge fashioning an appropriate sentence. Unless the court has any further questions, the government...
Being none, thank you, counsel.
Thank you. The government would ask that the district court's decision be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Dyer, you had used up, or we had all together used up all your time. We'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I would just like to note that this court should consider whether or not there is a reasonable probability that the district court would have imposed a lower sentence had it understood the impact of both the one-to-one parity argument and any pending legislation on the career offender guidelines.
I'm still troubled by how we would say that with respect to pending legislation, particularly since it never in fact passed. But
because
I don't see how you can call that, I don't see how we could call that an error.
Because the court did go down, and it suggests that it would have gone down even in order to get in front of the legislation and make Mr. Lawrence's sentence consistent with the crack sentences that were then being issued and upcoming. I think
to talk about Jones?
Yes, I think that Jones, first of all, the majority did not decide the merits of a benefit penalty distinction. And where it found the baseline in Jones, it is impossible to determine what that baseline would have been here. I think the more relevant question is, did the court consider an unconstitutional factor, and was Mr. Lawrence's constitutional rights, were they burdened in any way? Here, the district court obviously expected a confession. The court expected the same kind of confession and apology that the court in Scott did, but with somewhat less blatant or extreme language.
Go back to Jones, though. How does this differ? I realize the facts are different, but insofar as the legal effect, how is this different from Jones?
Well, Jones was very different because the court granted an acceptance of responsibility reduction there.
But did not give the full reduction. It gave only half, I think, or at least only a part of the reduction, and expressly did so based on the fact that the defendant had not pleaded guilty.
And so here's the one difference. One difference is that there the defendant did admit responsibility, and the question was the degree of that admission and the timing of it. And so then a remorse-o-meter could come into play. Where there is no admission and where there is no confession, the court cannot then expect a confession at sentencing. So a court can consider the decision to plead guilty but cannot consider the decision to go to trial. A court can consider a decision to cooperate but cannot consider a decision not to remain silent, to maintain silence.
Jones seems to say you can consider those other factors.
Jones found that the consideration was the timing of the acceptance, the Jones reread the court's reference to going to trial into a timing of the acceptance of responsibility. And I think that a court can obviously consider cooperation, guilty pleas, acceptance of responsibility, and confessions, and take into account the extent of
affirmatively, but Jones seems to say you can consider negatively the defendant's failure to plead guilty, do those other things.
In the context of a defendant who did admit responsibility, then the extent and timing of it became relevant, and I think that is not present here.
Can I go back to the line of questions about pending legislation? I just want to make sure I I have your argument. Are you saying that that what the district court judge was doing was trying to forecast where Congress was likely to go with this, and that she did that perhaps with the one-to-one parity, but neglected to see what effect it would have on career offender?
No, that she. My argument is that she considered the fact.
Let me phrase it another way. Is her framework for decision making the pending legislation, or is it something altogether different?
Both the pending legislation and the argument under Kimbrough for one-to-one parity. So she's looking at both of those. And with respect to the pending legislation, with the one-to-one parity, she says it will have no effect on the career offender guidelines, which was wrong.
Which is wrong, right.
With respect to the pending legislation, she said it would also have no effect. It was proposed. It doesn't matter whether she thought it would pass. It appeared that she would have gone down further had she understood that if something Congress did take some action, that it would reduce the career offender guidelines.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel.
Appreciate it.
Case is submitted. Thank you.
Thank you very much.